from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What's trending?
All right, let's check in on the hot topics. Trending.
Number one on what's trending, the second half of the baseball season gets underway tonight at Kauffman Stadium. The Royals begin a 9-game homestand. And the good news, it starts with the Chicago White Sox. You would like to think the Royals can get this second half started on the right note. Michael Wacha on the bump. The Royals 7-10 first pitch tonight. Vern's on deck show at 6 o'clock. Royals 52-45, as we know, 2 games back in the wild card race. We're going to talk more about this start of the second half. And I thought some interesting comments, some of them that we had heard before from Salvador Perez and J.J. Piccolo, about how the trade deadline could have gone last year and what would this year actually have looked like if that in fact happens. So we'll get into that in just a little bit. Also, a reminder, in about a half hour, we'll have one of the Royals broadcasters, Jake Eisenberg, joining us in the studio. It'll be good to talk to Jake about this All-Star break a little bit, a home run derby, All-Star game, his thoughts on how he kind of watched that and what that means for the club, and of course, his thoughts on this huge series and really homestand, 9-game homestand, where the Royals have been so good at home, how that could play out. Next up on what's trending, the Chiefs continue training camp today. It was the last days for just the rookies up there. Veterans will report later today. So today's practice, Mahomes, as usual, for this last rookie practice, if you will, did not participate. He got the morning off. I think he still does film stuff or whatever later in the day. But really, camp on Sunday, first practice open to the public. That's when I think, as we talked about earlier, we're going to really find out if Kingsley Suamataia has the inside track for the starting job. If they're already putting him out there with the ones on Sunday, and we look at prior history, when they had Trey Smith begin right away with the ones, and boom, he never lost the job. Same thing with Creed Humphrey. I get left tackle's different, but I think we're going to learn a lot on Sunday just based off of who is with the ones. If it's Wanya Morris, it means we got a full camp battle, a true camp battle between Morris and Kingsley Suamataia. Next up on what's trending, something that we predicted a little bit on Monday after the crazy scene Sunday night in the Copa America final with Argentina in Colombia. Remember, if you go back to Hard Rock Stadium, the photos and videos that came out where fans were storming the gates, right, without tickets, and to prevent any injury, they just allowed fans to go in despite having no tickets in some cases. And so then you had some fans later in the night when they locked down the stadium that couldn't get in, that had spent thousands on tickets, you know, thousands on flights and all of that. Well, they couldn't get in, and we're like, oh man, there's going to be some lawsuits. Fast forward to today, and it's exactly what has happened. According to ESPN, multiple lawsuits have been filed by fans against the South American soccer governing body and the operators of Hard Knock Stadium because of the chaos. The complaints are that they purchased tickets for the final, but that crowd control issues prevented them from entering the stadium. So each suit is seeking over $100,000 in damages. We'll see how that plays out. Of course, the United States hosting the World Cup in 2026, and we know the World Cup going to be right here in Kansas City in 2026. A lot of, at least in Miami, and hopefully it's a warning sign for every other stadium and city as well, of the type of security that's going to be needed to make sure these events can go off without any sort of problems. Next up on What's Trending, some sad news in the NFL and in the Chiefs world last night. Abner Haynes, Chiefs franchise's first 1,000-yard rusher, passed away at the age of 86. And next up on What's Trending, Nick Saban going to have Alabama's field named after him. I think it's pretty fitting. Makes a lot of sense. Talking about the greatest college football coach of all time, now going to have his name cemented forever on that field in Alabama. And I know Drew is busy cutting some audio from Mark Donovan, but typically this is where he would do an open leaderboard update. I don't know if he's prepared to do that. I don't know if the voice is ready. I don't know if the accent is ready. But typically he's got an hourly open leaderboard update for us.
I do not have the music for you, but the Open Championship from Royal Troon currently still sees Shane Lowry as the solo leader at 7-under par. Daniel Brown and Justin Rose, two Englishmen, at 5-under. They have separated themselves from people like Americans Billy Horschel and also Scotty Scheffler, who are at 2-under par. Tiger Woods is going to miss the cut, unfortunately, from Royal Troon in Troon, Scotland. The Open Championship continues through this weekend. We'll see what happens. But right now, Shane Lowry, Daniel Brown, and Justin Rose have separated themselves from the field, Alex.
Thanks, Drew.
Really trying. I'm rolling the R's way too much,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, big time. Big time.
I need to settle down.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Thank you for the update. That's what's trending. You're on Cody and Gold. Alex Gold, Drew Nixon with you today. 1 hour from now, Club 610 opens up as it does each and every Friday. It's going to be a fun one today. We've got Dusty's coming back, actually, for Club 610. He wanted to be part of it so badly. He's coming back on a Friday after doing mornings this morning, and he's making the cocktail today.
Part of me wants to redeem myself. We might have to have an Open Championship
with everybody
in Club 610 so I can redeem the Scottish accent for Dusty, okay, because he was not a believer after the botched job earlier.
Okay.
So I think we might try one more time.
Please be prepared then for that.
And I'm gonna have to get a glass of water so I can.
He is making a drink called liquid marijuana, which was.
Before taking a drink.
Okay.
Should I do it after?
You should drink while doing it. Okay. So liquid marijuana is a requested drink from one of our other guests for Club 610. So we have Aaron Ladd from 41 joining us for Club 610 at 1 o'clock, and Cheyenne from sales joining us as well. So it should be a very interesting Club 610 heading into a weekend right here on Cody and Gold. As I mentioned, 30 minutes, we'll talk with less than 30 minutes now. We'll talk with Jake Eisenberg. Also in just about 8 minutes, we'll get in some comments from Mark Donovan, the Chiefs team president, about the stadium. And he put a timeline on when they would like to have a decision. I think that's the biggest takeaway. I told you the press conference is what, Drew, 25, 30 minutes overall. But there was no need to carry that in its entirety because a lot of it was talking about Missouri Western. But I wanted to hear about the stadium stuff. And we've got a couple of the notable things. We'll play that back for you here in about 8 minutes when it comes to the stadiums. But for the Royals, look, the second half of the season starts tonight, as we said. 9 straight home games. They're 31-18 at home. I mean, this is where they have made their headway when it comes to the standings this season. At home. Right? They haven't been awful on the road, but they have been a way better baseball team at home for a variety of reasons. And I know the club is kind of leaning into the fan support. They sent out some stuff today. You may have seen Vinny Pasquantino. They had a cool video where they sent up this banner on a plane that flew around the city thanking fans for their support. They're leaning into that, right? The fan support does matter to them at Kauffman Stadium, and they've given a hell of a product when they've been at Kauffman Stadium, 31-18. And a great way to start the second half and get some momentum rolling, right? You get a bad White Sox team coming to town. Then you get the Diamondbacks, who are, what, around a 500 baseball team. It sets up where you could have a really strong first nine out of the gate, where you can get greedy a little bit. And earlier I said at least 5 wins. I think that has to be the minimum expectation, honestly, out of this homestand. But I'm going to be probably even greedier than that, knowing the opponents. You're 2 back in the wild card. I tend to, as you guys know, not really focus on the division anymore. They're 7 back. I would love to start having a real divisional conversation again. But my focus is keeping an eye on the wild card race. Keep an eye on the Red Sox, the Astros, the Mariners, the Twins, for example. So I'm excited for the second half tonight. It should be a really nice weekend out of Kauffman Stadium as well. Tomorrow night's the Michael Garcia bobblehead. It's next week is the Mahomes one. I made a mistake yesterday. I think I said tonight's the Mahomes bobblehead. That's next Friday is the Mahomes bobblehead. But you guys can go to Royals website, obviously, and figure out all the promotion stuff. And this morning I was going around and seeing what's new kind of in the baseball world heading into the second half for other teams and how the other wildcard teams are being viewed. And I came across actually an article from The Athletic from Rustin Dodd, who used to work for the Kansas City Star, and now he writes for The Athletic. And he had a story up about Salvador Perez and last year's trade deadline. And I think some of this we had known. There had been reporting after the deadline last year and in the offseason about how close maybe Salvi was to being traded. But I think it's relevant, again, if we think about what has occurred since last year's trade deadline to now. Not only a team that was only won 56 games and what that meant, but knowing what they did in the offseason, would history have been the same or different if Salvador Perez would have been traded? And that's because in the story it says Salvador Perez was willing to go to the Texas Rangers last year at the deadline, but he and the Royals are glad it didn't happen. With the Royals on their way to 106 losses, Perez said, yes, quote, sometimes you get frustrated. I was trying to make it to the playoffs again. I'm getting older. I tried to be honest with myself. We know ultimately a deal never materialized. Discussions between the Royals and Marlins about Perez, who owns a home in Miami, also failed to progress. We had heard more about the Miami thing, right? We had heard a lot about Miami because of his proximity to the area in the offseason. There was a little bit of rumor maybe at one point about perhaps the White Sox or whatever. So it's not all new information. We know JJ had publicly talked about it. In this article, he's quoted as saying, if we had traded him being Perez, we still would have wanted to be more competitive, but it might have been a little bit more long range. So my question is, not only has Salvi, of course, cemented his legacy in 14 and 15, but by what appears to be a life for now in Kansas City, and that's just so rare in baseball. If Salvador Perez would have been traded, though, let's just play that hypothetical out. He was willing to maybe go to Texas. We know the Rangers went on to win the World Series. If he was traded there, Salvi would have had two rings for his Cooperstown path to the Hall of Fame. Now, I think staying with one team does carry some weight, right? I think voters should weigh, especially at the catcher position, the production that he likely is going to end up with at the end of his career, and then couple it with staying with the Royals organization. That's just so rare. It just doesn't happen. So I think that's a plus on his side for his case whenever that day comes that he's eligible for the Hall of Fame. But let's just be honest. I mean, if he had a second ring, that weighs way more. So an unselfish decision, I guess he said yes, but just that he was willing. He still never once has ever wanted to be traded. He just maybe gave the go-ahead that if that trade would have materialized with the Rangers, that he would have not blocked it. But man, his Hall of Fame case would have been even stronger. And that's why I hope this team makes the postseason this year to get Salvador Perez an opportunity for another big time moment. We all know the wild card game against the A's and what that was, to have another chance, another big time at bat in that moment. And that's what could happen if you just get in the dance. If you just get in the wild card round with this pitching staff, anything can happen. We know what the Diamondbacks did last year as, I think, the last team in as a wild card in the NL, if I'm not mistaken. I think they were the final wild card. And we know they went on to the World Series before losing to the Texas Rangers. The other question I had when I was reading this article, though, was, all right, so if Salvador Perez was traded, do you think the Royals still would have signed Seth Lugo this past offseason? Does Bobby Wood Jr. sign long-term? Because as much as we discussed always, would the organization be willing to give out the largest contract in franchise history to Bobby Wood Jr.? And the answer, of course, ended up being yes. But it was, hey, they got to sell Bobby Wood Jr. as well. Now, you got to believe if you were Bobby Wood Jr. that this organization was headed in the right direction, that this organization was going to go and sign pieces in the offseason to allow them to compete. So do you think the trickle-down effect would have happened? If they don't sign Seth Lugo and Salvi would not have been on the team, would Bobby have actually signed long-term? And the money still might have been offered, but would he have been willing to do it? I don't know if we'll ever know the answer to that, but I think it's interesting to think about. I still believe they would have signed Seth Lugo. And if that's the case, then maybe that would have still been enough to show for Bobby Wood Jr. to actually sign here long-term. So I think both still would have happened, but it definitely would have caused a little more uncertainty. The other name that was mentioned in the article, though, about a potential trade referencing last year's deadline was Brady Singer and how the Rangers were very interested. They ultimately, though, traded, if you recall, for Max Scherzer and for Jordan Montgomery. And that worked out very nicely, at least the Montgomery signing trade, for the Texas Rangers. Brady Singer is the name to watch in the offseason. Not just that it'd be the Rangers that trade for him, but he would be, if you're asking anybody that's currently on the in the organization that potentially could get traded in the offseason, I think Brady Singer has to be at the top of that list. The value he presents, we know this organization needs to be and has been recently more transactional. Next year, maybe Chris Bubich is able to be in the rotation. Right, you've seen a little bit from Alec Marsh this year that maybe gives you some confidence. He can obviously compete again for a spot in the rotation. Kyle Wright, coming off an injury. Can he be part of the rotation? So you have some other options to where maybe you get some value back, whether it's prospects or someone that can help you at the big league level next year in an area where you're weaker. And these are the type of moves I think they're going to have to make. And Brady Singer will be an interesting name to follow. And clearly teams, based off of his performance, this was last year, and he's only been even better to start this season in the first half. There would be interest. So those were just a couple things I took away. The full article's up at The Athletic. Rustin Dodd wrote it about Salvador Perez, but there was that quick little note as well in reference to Brady Singer. We'll talk about the second half, as I said, with Jake Eisenberg from the Royals in studio in about 15 minutes. But let's go back up to St. Joe a little bit, as I said. But I was curious when they got to the stadium stuff, what would be said. And out of the entire presser, I think there's maybe two or three things that were said that are fairly relevant for the stadium conversation. This first one, I think, is the biggest takeaway you have to have out of the entire press conference. And it is for the first time that I can recall what sounds like a true timeline of this next decision, right? Before in the spring, there was, and even going back to last fall, there was always a timeline of when do they want to get on the ballot and things like that. Now that the vote failed in April, the question has always been, all right, we've heard all this noise about conversations. We know Kansas created the Star Bond legislation to try to entice the Royals and or Chiefs to Kansas. We know that a week or so ago, the governor of Missouri was in the Kansas City area, met with Jackson County officials, met with Clay County officials. So we know all of that, but we still all wondered when maybe could there be a decision from Chiefs and or Royals on what path they want to go, whether that path requires a public vote or not. That's still up in the air. Listen to Mark Donovan, though, talk about when they want to have a good idea or a decision on what they're actually doing.
Yeah, I think 6 months from today, we're going to have a really good idea of where we are. We may not be done, but we need to have a really good idea. I'll go back to the point I made earlier. When you're building a new stadium, there's a lot more lead time than when you're renovating. So that's why that one's a little bit longer and will push us a little bit faster to make a decision. I'll just acknowledge, because I'm sure the follow-up question is coming, that timeline kind of plays into the Missouri timeline as well, right? So if we're on that timeline with Kansas, we need to make a decision, then Missouri sort of has to play to that same timeline. So that's the window I'd give you.
6 months makes plenty of sense, doesn't it? He alluded to this with the Missouri timeline. Remember, the governor is term limited. He's out of office in January. Who knows who's going to win that race in Missouri for the next governor? But that's going to be key. And so you probably need to have a thought process of which direction you're heading in by the time that transition period actually happens. It's the first time since the vote failed in April that we've heard a member from either organization that I can recall. I don't think I missed anything that I can recall put a timeline on a decision. It sounds like 6 months now is when the Chiefs plan on being able to say, are they going to attempt to stay in Missouri? And again, what does that look like? Is it a renovation? Is it a new stadium? We don't have that answer. But do they then decide to go the Kansas route? Which that would, of course, require a new stadium. Like, so in 6 months, I think now we know. That's a big development, actually. I think it's the biggest development out of the entire press conference. He also did talk about the options that they have going forward now. As we said, after the vote failed in April, all that did was give the Chiefs and Royals more options, both Kansas, both Missouri and Clay County or Jackson County or any other county.
Yeah, I think that'll depend on the financing of the deal. I know that legislator Arbica has mentioned a different tax structure, raised different kinds of money to compete directly with Kansas. You know, then we'd have to look at a new building. We're open to it. We're open to a new building on the complex. We're open to a new building somewhere else. We're open to a dome or an outdoor as a new building. We're also very open to renovating GHA Field at Arrowhead because I think it is what it is. It's iconic. It's something that's unique. And we'd love to be able to do that. It's just going to come down to what makes the most sense. And I want to reiterate the factors that go into that decision are what's best for our fans, what's best for this franchise for the next few decades.
The massive decision that everybody had an opportunity to vote for on April 2nd, it's still a massive decision that's out there for the clubs to decide, right? And whether or not it's going to require another public vote is the other angle. You heard him reference at the beginning. He was talking about Manny Ibarka, I believe, at the beginning of that cut because there's two different, I don't know if proposals is the right word to use, but certainly sitting in committee in Jackson County for a November ballot measure that would be Chiefs only. And now hearing from Mark Donovan, they want to have a decision on what direction they're heading in the next six months. I know November is within 6 months, but that tells me that the whole idea of having the Chiefs on the ballot, maybe I'm way off here. I don't know if you took it the same way, 913-586-7610. The idea of having a Chiefs Jackson County ballot measure by November, I don't know how that's realistic. You have Mark Donovan saying they hope in the next 6 months to have a decision on whether they're staying in Missouri or going to Kansas. And then from there, there's the financial element. If they stay in Missouri, if the tax and the money from the state is enough, is it enough for a new stadium, or is it once again a renovation? And then we get into the other question. Like, there's a ton more still out there. Is the renovation way different? It has to be, right? If you're renovating, it has to be a different plan than the plan that they laid out there before.
I think it was interesting. He said it could be a new stadium on the complex. So we've already been through this conversation, though, where it's been said that there's not much developmental area or area to develop around. It would be interesting that concept. I know that there was another aspect of him saying, and I don't know if we'll get to it, 2031 is where they'll be at. They're going to be at Arrowhead through 2031. You know, the earliest that they'll be in a new building is 8 years from now.
And yeah, here's his answer on that. Yeah, here's his answer on the timeline, which we've known with the lease agreements. We've known for a while that the Royals will be out of there by a certain point in time. The Chiefs will play at Arrowhead, whether it's a renovation or a new stadium, through 2031. Like that stuff has always been pretty consistent.
I think we're looking at all options on that front. We're just getting into the Kansas side and all the options that creates. As I think has been acknowledged, when we look at both Kansas and Missouri, we look at both the training facility and the stadium. So there may be different approaches to how you approach a training facility separate from a stadium. There may be, you know, an approach where you put them together. One of the limiting factors is just acreage. Anything we do as we go forward, no matter which side of the state line it is, will include 20,000 parking spaces because tailgating is such a core element of our experience and our brand. So that sort of limits you on the stadium side. A lot less limitations when you look at a training facility. And the reality is, if you look around the league at these training facilities that are being built, you know, they become economic drivers in themselves with the development you can do around those. I don't have a firm date for you today. I would just go back to what I mentioned earlier, which is look at the timeline and work back from 31. It's important for everybody to understand that we are playing Kansas City Chiefs football home games, if it's not an international game, at GHA Field at Arrowhead through 2031. That is our plan. That is what we're doing. So what we have to have is somewhere to play our games for the 31 season. In order to do that, you got to back up. When do you start planning? When do you start building? How do you renovate or build new? If you're renovating it, how are you doing it over seasons while you're still playing there? A lot of those factors play into that. And that goes back to the option point. Like, we need to have options. We need to have those options to a point of definition to be able to make a decision. And so that's the process we're in right now.
They have plenty of options. That's not been the problem. After April 2nd, both the Royals and Chiefs have plenty of options. Which one makes the most sense financially and all that is the big question, both for the public money that's being used, to be honest, for the organization as well, and exactly what makes the most sense. And, you know, someone on the text line says retractable roof or dome, period. Yeah, I mean, if they build a new stadium, it's going to have a roof. I think that, but we've heard time and time again, a renovated Arrowhead is not, they have said multiple times, that's not going to have a roof, right? Like that would be brand new news if all of a sudden they have claimed that that's just not possible.
Yeah.
So that would be stunning. The only way you get the roof and dome is a new stadium. I've been pretty consistent, whether it's on the Missouri side or Kansas side, truly don't really care. I have a preference, but I don't really care. I think it doesn't make sense to renovate Arrowhead. I don't think it makes sense financially to renovate a building at that age. And I love Arrowhead. I know we'll get text on this. We already have. Love Arrowhead, the history, all of that. If they renovate Arrowhead, and we're going to be sitting here in 20 years again, and we're going to be talking about them needing to build a new stadium then.
You want the palace for Patrick Mahomes.
While he's here, why not build the palace now? Using public money either way, now different levels of it. But like the reason why in the April 2nd vote, the Royals were willing to sign, what, a 40-year lease? The Chiefs were willing to sign a 20-year lease. That means after 20 years, they were going to come back and probably ask for a new stadium then. So why would you not go and just get the new stadium now if you're going to be putting in this money? So we'll see. Which jurisdiction is willing to provide the funds necessary to make that happen? So this continues, right? The biggest takeaway I would have from today is just that Mark Donovan said 6-month timeline of making a decision. Let's keep an eye on that. We'll talk more about this during Club 610. But up next, let's go back on the field with the Royals. Jake Eisenberg, Royals broadcaster, joins us in studio next.
Cody and Gold.
If the Royals win the World Series, I will get, and you can mark it if you want, but go.
Everybody knows
this tattooed on my body.
Who gives a We're winning games.
Brought to you by Heartland Men's Health, the leader in men's sexual health. Thousands of men have been successfully treated for low T, ED, and more, all with discretion and compassion. Make your appointment at heartlandmenshealth.com.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Back here on Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Drew Nixon with you. 30 minutes away from Club 610 on a Friday. We've got Aaron Ladd from 41 coming in studio. Dusty's back up here. He just dropped off a big box of items for his cocktail called liquid marijuana, which we're gonna all figure out exactly what's in that. I'm trying to see what we got over there. Is there some Malibu rum maybe in there? I'm not sure. So we're going to see. He's got that. Cheyenne from sales is coming up, making her Club 610 debut in the 1 o'clock hour. So we'll get to that in a little bit, but I'm excited. I got Jake Eisenberg, Royals broadcaster, in studio. I would offer you to stay for Club 610, but I know you got a game to call tonight.
Yeah, I think maybe post game.
If Club 610 is still bumping, I'll come by post game. I don't know that I want to touch whatever Dusty's rocking with there, but it does sound like a good time.
Yeah, we have never done a late night Club 610. You know, that might be reserved for the next Vegas trip, or we want to do a lake day, a Cody and Gold at the lake. We want to do our show from the lake where just all day is Club 610, and we just have different people stop by. That is in the works, maybe next summer.
It sounds like a great excuse to spend some time by the lake.
Right. I mean, it's a tough life. Sometimes you got to go to the lake. Sometimes you got to go to Vegas. Like, we're actually going to be in Vegas next month doing some shows out there. So, yeah, you know, it could be worse. How about you, though? All-star break? It's got to be a nice little break for you.
Yeah, it's a good chance to kind of hit the reset button a little bit. And the Royals finished off the, I'll say, quote-unquote, first half, you know, 97 games. Like, we got 65 left. It's not the first half anymore. Yeah. That's just the way we talk about it. But the Royals finished up at Fenway, which was a good coincidence for me and my wife. Her family's from the Boston area, and so we spent some time out on Cape Cod, got some beach and some sun for a couple of days, visited some people, and came back Wednesday night, and then recharged a lot yesterday, and now here we go, a 65-game sprint to the finish.
All-star game and the Derby, I know we've had a chance to talk about it. I'm just curious your perspective taking that in. Monday night was awesome. Obviously, I wish Bobby would have won, but what a show, what a showcase for Kansas City.
Man, it was so cool. I mean, just to see Bobby on that stage, and it's not just the power that was on display that, you know, we've seen up close and personal since he started his career, but letting everybody else nationally get a chance to see that because they might not have been paying enough attention, and now they certainly are, but also the joy, the genuine joy that he exuded the entire time. I mean, I think maybe my favorite part of the entire Derby was watching his giddiness walking up to Michael Buffer when he's announcing his name and saying his famous line
and
everything.
Yeah.
I mean, he was like looking over his shoulder, looking at like Salvi and Cole and Seth and being like, can you guys see this? This is really happening. Like, that was so cool to see that, like, amidst all of the fame and splendor and pomp and circumstance, that he's still a 24-year-old kid going out and having an awesome time playing this game or hitting a bunch of home runs in his hometown stadium.
So people thought the Buffer stuff was cheesy, but Drew and I were talking on, I guess it would have been on Tuesday. I enjoyed it. I thought that was cool. Smart of baseball to why not make it seem like a bigger deal? I get sometimes you can go over the top with it, but I thought that was cool. Maybe if it wasn't Bobby Witt involved, I wouldn't have liked it. I don't know.
That's where I landed on it. It's like Teoscar Hernandez's reaction was kind of like, what are we doing? Which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And like, had Bobby not reacted the way he did, it might have been like, did we really need this? But because Bobby reacted the way he did, I think that gave the whole idea a little bit more credibility. And ultimately, like, it's the moment that I remember from that because I think it captured what Bobby's experience was. And then the All-Star game the next day, like, it was so cool seeing four Royals in that game, seeing Salvi catch both Cole and Seth and Bobby make a great play on defense behind those guys like we've seen a ton, but both those guys put up zeros, and you've got two first-time All-Stars in Cole Reagans and Seth Lugo who have had tremendous seasons. For Cole, it's kind of returning to the place where it all started for him. Like, what a full circle accomplishment. And for Seth, I mean, that's the ballpark that's about as close to his hometown as you can get, but also a guy who was a 1,032nd overall pick, and now 9 years into his career, he's an all-star and a starter and all that, and they're throwing to a future Hall of Fame catcher in Salvador Perez. And I thought, thinking about what Salvi's perspective might have been during this, you know, he was the most senior all-star at that game. Jose Altuve also had nine all-star selections but didn't play. So Salvi was the elder statesman of the entire all-star game, which is, I think, something that might have gotten lost in the shuffle a little bit. But he was talking about his first all-star game, like his memory was catching Mariano Rivera, who was in his last all-star game at the time. And now Salvi's in his ninth and I don't think final all-star game, to be clear. But he's catching Cole Reagans in his first of likely many. He's catching Seth Lugo in his first of hopefully a good amount now toward the back half of his career. He's teammates with Bobby for the first in a slew in his burgeoning superstar career. And I think that cohesion and seeing the four of them there together, I think that was a really cool thing.
Yeah, I know some people were disappointed that Seth Lugo didn't get the All-Star start, right? Because that's a great honor to get that. But I do think you got to give credit Bruce Bochy the way you laid it out, that they all got to be on the field at the same time. Some, you know, obviously Reagans and Lugo weren't, but they were all part of it together later in the game because some fans were bummed that Lugo didn't get the nod. But I think the way they ended up playing together later in the game actually created a pretty cool moment.
Yeah, I'd agree. And also, I mean, objectively, statistically, Lugo's first 97 games, first 20 starts, outstanding, phenomenal. statistically, Tarek Skubal was probably a little bit better. Corbin Burns was probably a little bit better statistically. And Corbin Burns has the pedigree, reigning Cy Young and all that, or multi-Cy Young and all that. And I also thought that part of the reason why Burns started, and this is maybe not true, this is maybe opinion, but I'm not sure if you read about the fact that he has a new set of twins that were born prematurely. And so he was only in Texas for like 12 hours.
Oh, wow.
He flew in, started the game, threw his inning, did post-game media, and then left and went back to Arizona to spend some time with his family. And so, you know, that allows him to be part of that experience and also do the things that he needs to do. And then you have Skubal come in. And then you have Seth Lugo come in and pitch to Salvi. And honestly, I thought one of the funniest parts about that, Steve Stewart did a great interview with Seth this past weekend after all the All-Stars were announced and asked Seth, hey, would you like to start? And he kind of quipped and was like, well, I've certainly come out of the bullpen enough. I'd rather just start the game. He also said it'd be really cool to throw to Salvi. So you kind of balance mm-hmm. those two things, and having Seth throw to Salvi, I think that's a really perfect way for that game to really unfold.
We got Jake Eisenberg, Royals broadcaster, joining us in studio. He's got the Bally polo on, so I mean, TV night for you, huh?
Yeah, I'm sort of playing for the other team tonight, but that's just the way the schedule worked out. I promise next time I come in, I'll wear the 610 Sports Perfect. Radio polo. I got to get one of those first.
Yeah, but you and me both at times. but yes, we'll get you on. Maybe we got to make that happen. First half of the season, and then we can get into the second half. Just the first half pitching, right? I mean, was that the number one thing that stands out to you?
That's the number one, number two, and number three thing that stands out. I don't have the number top of mind because I'm going to go to the ballpark and do a lot of my prep as soon as we wrap up here. But I want to say it was 48 quality starts through the first 97 games for the Royals. So I'm going to say it was 48 quality starts through the first 97 games. Someone can fact check me on that. But the point that I'm making is that, well, you divide 97 by two, it's a little bit more than 48. But basically, you're getting a quality start every other game. That's six innings and maximum three earned runs allowed. That's minimum six innings, maximum three earned runs allowed. And that's what you're getting every other game. And to be clear, we've seen Brady Singer go out there and allow just one run, a major league best, 12 times this season. We've seen Seth Lugo put up 15 quality starts. Cole Reagans has 14 quality starts. Michael Wacha's had the fifth best ERA in the American League since the beginning of May. That's kind of flown under the radar.
Definitely.
Alec Marsh certainly has been up and down, but we've seen his dominance against the Yankees. Like, that's part of what the ceiling is for Alec Marsh. And the fact that that's the guy that is quote unquote your number five starter. I mean, the starting pitching is giving this team a chance to win day in and day out. And I say 48 quality starts in 97 games. Most of those quality starts, I feel anecdotally, are seven innings and two runs or six innings and one run. It's not just the bare minimum to check that box. I mean, these starters are going out there and giving this team a chance to win. The offense is supporting the pitching for the most part, and the bullpen, for the most part, has done the job it needs to do. And sure, there are going to be frustrations and qualms about a loss here and a loss there. And I go back to something that Matt Quatrero talks about. He talks a lot about the razor-thin margins in Major League Baseball between winning and losing. And I think we forget sometimes, and he often reminds us, the team in the other dugout is trying to win the game just as much as the team in our dugout. And when you look at those razor-thin margins between winning and losing, sometimes there are going to be games that you win that you're not supposed to win. Conversely, sometimes there are going to be some games that you lose that you are supposed to win. And so I look at the kind of statistics or how the first half, so to speak, broke down. I look at the starting pitching. That's one, two, and three. Number four, though, I would say is the ratio of comeback wins to blown lead losses. I don't know that this is statistically true, but it's something that I've been keeping an eye on. Last year, the Royals had 20 comeback wins, 50 blown lead losses. 50 games last year, the Royals had a lead at some point during the game and did not win. That was the most in baseball. But the difference between those comeback wins and blown lead losses was 30, minus 30. So far this year, 25 comeback wins, among the most in baseball, 20 blown lead losses. Those blown lead losses, those comeback wins are going to happen. You stay on the positive side of that ratio, and this year, plus five, that's a huge difference. And you want to know why the Royals are on pace to win 87 games, which would be 31 more than last year? Well, you look at the difference between those two things. Last year, minus 30. This year, plus five. That's a 25-game difference, you know, extrapolated toward the end of the season. And, like, there's your gap right there.
Yeah, we're talking to Jake Eisenberg. That's good stuff. I was thinking, too, you mentioned one, two, and three being the rotation. I see if you agree with me on this. I think the second half, the bullpen's going to be even more important, though. I know as much as we've talked about some of the struggles at times, and it looks like at least heading into the All-Star break, you know, Chris Bubich, minimum outings, but some promise there from Bubich helping out the bullpen. I thought MacArthur's pitched better the last month or so. They go and get Hunter Harvey. We're going to all find out together to see if they can make some adjustments to have him be effective. I feel like with the innings limitations that might come into play with some of the guys in the rotation who are all pitching career high in innings or pacing for that, you might need that bullpen more than you even did in the first half of the season.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting part because, again, we have this mindset of thinking first half, second half, but again, it's 65 games, which is not even close to half. It's kind of like a third almost, a little bit more than a third, and so we're pretty far along into the season, which is why the starting pitchers are at the career highs in starts and innings pitched the way they are. And this has been asked of both Matt Quatrero and J.J. Piccolo, and they both said that they're in constant communication with those starters, as they should be, about how they're feeling, what they need to do. And yeah, we might see down the stretch that they steal an inning here or there, depending on the game situation. We might see, and as we've seen, you know, the beginning portion of the season, when there's an off day that comes up, instead of keeping everybody or moving everybody up, everybody gets an extra day, and those extra days, you know, kind of build upon each other. But, you know, a guy like Seth Lugo, he prepares to pitch a complete game every single time he takes them out, and that is no different for the other four guys in the staff. But Seth Lugo in particular has told me, yeah, I'm thinking that I'm going to throw at least 135 pitches for every start. That'd be 15 per inning for 9 innings. So he's ready to go the distance if called upon, and these guys are ready to go to the distance, not just for the regular season, but in the postseason, depending on what happens. As far as the bullpen is concerned, yeah, I think MacArthur's been great. The addition of Chris Bubich has been fantastic. He's looked awesome so far in the appearances that he's made. And the Hunter Harvey addition, I think, is a really, really important one. I was taking a look at some of the Royals' bullpen numbers this morning, and the one that remains concerning is the low strikeout rate. In this day and age, a bullpen that gets strikeouts is one that is generally successful.
Right.
The Royals' bullpen has the second lowest strikeout rate in baseball, only to the Rockies. And the walk rate is a little bit higher than you'd like for where the strikeout rate is. And you add a guy like Hunter Harvey, who's got 50 strikeouts and 12 walks in 45 innings with the Nationals. He's been great with inherited runners. He's been excellent in terms of holds. I don't know how much stock you want to put in holds, but when you've got the most of them, like, that doesn't right, say nothing. Right. But I think you add that kind of an arm to the back end of your bullpen, and you just spread out that leverage a little bit, and you spread out the pressure just a little bit. And so now the pressure is a little bit more off guys like John Schreiber or Angel Serpa or Chris Stratton or Will Smith, who are being used in the spaces that they should be used in. JJ said, it's a matchup bullpen, not a power bullpen. Well, Hunter Harvey adds some power. And I think that for a team to contend and then be successful in the postseason, you need some power at the back end of the bullpen.
Starting tonight, White Sox in town, 9-game homestand. We know how good this team's been at home, with 31-18 at home, and so this has been a friendly place for them to play. It feels like it's, every game is massive when you said 65 left and you're 2 back in a wild card, 7 back in the division. Every game's massive. But considering the opponent, White Sox and the Diamondbacks coming into town, considering how good the Royals have been at home, this feels like a huge 9-game start to this, not second half, but like you said, we all kind of just say it's the yeah, second half. Post All-Star break for them to position themselves in a really good spot heading into August and for the home stretch.
Yeah, this is an important stretch. 13 of the Royals' first 16 games coming out of the All-Star break are against teams that are currently below 500. The only series against an above 500 team is the Diamondbacks coming up Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And right now they're a game above 500. So they're really kind of right on the cusp. If they lose their series this weekend, they're a 500 team coming into Kauffman Stadium on Monday. So yeah, this is a really important stretch because right after this 16 game stretch, you got the Red Sox coming to town. That's a team that you are battling actively for a wild card spot. To be clear, the division is very much in play. But focusing on the wild card for a split second, that season series is the tiebreaker. You lost 2 out of 3 at Fenway. It's imperative to win that series at Kauffman Stadium to at least have that tiebreaker as a split or go to whatever the next tiebreaker is, if it comes down to splitting hairs, which these wild card spots often do. As far as the division's concerned, yeah, you've got a chance. You're 7 games back of the Guardians. You do have 7 games left against the Guardians. That's coming up in August and September. I think it's 7 games in a 10-day span.
Yeah, it's right there at the end of August.
It's quite the gauntlet at the end of August and beginning of September, but you've got an absolute shot at winning the American League Central. And as far as bullpens are concerned, maybe this is going out on too much of a limb, but I know this is sports radio. I'm going to make a take.
Let's hear it.
The Guardians bullpen has been, period, the best bullpen in baseball. It has also been, in my opinion, the most used bullpen in baseball. They are leaning on all of their pitchers. Emmanuel Clase is otherworldly, but Cade Smith and Nick Sandlin and Sam Henches and Scott Barlow too, and Hunter Gaddis has been phenomenal. But like those five or six guys have been used more than just about any arm out of the bullpen in baseball. How sustainable is that? I don't know, but maybe it's not. And if it's not, what happens? So I think that there is a chance. I think that this door, yeah, seven games back, that's a tough hill to climb. It's not impossible, especially when you still got seven head-to-head against the Guardians. It is there for the taking. It's not going to be easy. But I think, you know, if you were to say, hey, Jake, the Royals are going to be seven games above 500, two games back of a wild card, seven games back of the division, coming out of the All-Star break. If you told me that in surprise, I think I'd say, where do I sign?
Oh, for sure. We'd be running to cash that in right away and sign that document. No, no question. You know how this goes, though, right? We get greedy as the season goes on.
As we should. We get as we should.
You know, and I hear you on the Guardians. You know, I it's not popular, but I've said I'm kind of just focused on the wild card. I would gladly be wrong. I think the Guardians, and knowing the fact there's a Twins team that's still in between, you're talking about leapfrogging two teams. I'm a little more thinking that the wild card is ultimately going to be the path for the Royals. But that's the question, what you alluded to with the Guardians, their bullpen or the team. Are they way out in front of their heels with what they did in the first half of the season, essentially? And is this a team that they're going to fall back a little bit? Or are they really, I mean, they're the best team in American League, right?
Yeah, best team in the American League. And it's like, we're past the point where it's a fluke. Yes, the bullpen has been awesome, but like, you've also got, I think it was four All-Stars in their lineup. And Stephen Kwan, Jose Ramirez, Josh Naylor, and David Fry, who's come out of nowhere. Like, that is still something that you don't turn your nose to. The starting pitching has been suspect, and how the Guardians proceed with the starting pitching, that's going to tell a lot about what happens this final sprint. To be honest, maybe this is not the best thing to say. I'd be a little bit more worried about the Twins. I think they are a more well-rounded bunch with less obvious flaws, especially offensively, especially with the starting pitching they have, and they've got a pretty good bullpen also. That's the team that I think could make a very strong push. As far as focusing on the division or focusing on the wild card, frankly, I'm not looking at the wild card until, I don't know, mid to late August, even early September. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Whether you're in a playoff spot right now or out of a playoff spot right now, the season doesn't end right now. So focus on the division until the division is no longer attainable. If you're putting yourself in position to win the division, you're putting yourself in position to contend for a wild card spot.
We got Jake Eisenberg, another couple minutes here from the Royals, joining us in studio. Now, we mentioned you're on TV tonight. Can you do me a favor? I don't know if maybe you guys already have this in your plans. You haven't had your production meeting or anything. I'm sure you saw the announcement yesterday of this new menu item out at Kauffman Stadium, right?
Oh, not only did I see, I must have gotten like 50 texts from a bunch of different people, family, friends, that people that live here, people that don't, ask me about this
thing. I think they need to bring the taste of the K Taco up to the booth tonight for you guys to maybe try out. We want to do this. So if, for those that don't know, there's a new menu item. It's $25. It's the taste of the K Taco. So it's a charred hot dog wrapped in a cheeseburger quesadilla topped with barbecue brisket, fries, romaine lettuce, pickled red onion, sriracha cracker jacks, and 816 sauce. I don't know, some barbecue sauce. I don't know what 816 sauce is. You got to try this. I want to try. I mean, you have the means to do this. The Aramark can just bring that bad boy right up to the booth for you tonight.
I had two thoughts. Well, I had three thoughts when I first saw this. My first thought is, man, what a country.
Yeah.
We push the bounds of ballpark food regularly. What a country. The second thing is, I had never heard of sriracha cracker jacks before.
I didn't know that was a thing
they
either.
They sound great. I kind of want to try those on their own. The third thought I had is, okay, we got to try this somehow. It would make for fun radio, I think, to try it on the air and kind of go taste bud by taste bud. Maybe works a little better on TV. I'm going to have to put the onus on HUD, though, to try this. I need a gluten-free version.
Okay, fair enough.
I've got celiac, so I need the gluten-free version. If they can somehow make that happen, I'm all in. Believe me.
All right,
I'm all in.
So we need HUD to try this
but
tonight.
But HUD's got to be the designated eater, so to speak, and go after this thing. I don't even want to give him a fork and knife. I just want him to, you know,
well,
go right after
part.
It.
Looking at the photo, I'll turn it back around and say, you've seen it, but so you can have a fresh picture of it. God.
How do you eat that thing?
I don't know how you eat it. Maybe you're lucky you get one bite, but I feel like by the time you're biting, all the Cracker Jacks are falling off the top of the taco. And then after one bite, you're down to the fork and knife.
Yeah. Look, I think there are a lot of people that are going to try it over the course of this weekend and the rest of this season. And I have asked, please, on behalf of somebody who can't eat this unless it's modified, please try it and report back for science.
Yeah, I mean, look, maybe Vern can try it. Because if Aramark had a way to bring it to the studio, then I would have just done it today during Club 610. But to go out there, Vern's already out there. It just makes a lot of sense, you know? I feel like you have the means, you know, if our show tries it, we're in $75 right there. I'll be honest, you know, we're cheap. We're in radio, Jake. So I'm not spending $25 for the thing. So
you don't think that thing's worth $25? All the ingredients on there?
I think it's a lot of food. I definitely think it's a ton of food.
I mean, that's dinner and a half.
Yeah, I mean, if you just told me it was a hot dog wrapped in a cheeseburger quesadilla, I'm in.
Yeah.
That sounds good. I did say that you got to consume this on a non-dollar dog night, because then you feel like you're getting even more bang for your buck. If you have the dog wrapped in the quesadilla on a dog night,
that's
you feel
point.
Like, man, I could just have a bunch of hot dogs. Tonight's a good night. When you go out to the K, open up this homestand tonight. I'll be watching on TV tonight. I expect HUD to be convinced by you to at least take a bite of this.
Yeah, time. We'll see. We'll see if we can make it happen. But, man, I would love to know what HUD would say about this.
Jake, it's good to have you in studio, man. I know we've had you on the show and you've been on the station. You do a great job, of course, with the broadcast. And well, you'll be on the radio next week, right?
I'll be on the radio. Yeah, I'll be on the radio Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Okay, but we'll be watching tonight as well. Good stuff, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for letting me come by. Nice to check out your digs.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Up next, Club 610 on a Friday. We'll have Dusty Likens. We'll have Aaron Ladd stopping by, and we're drinking something called liquid marijuana. We're going to all find out together next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.